Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood.
On Tuesdays, get your pop culture news and reviews with a pure Bostonian perspective on the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then on Thursdays, you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, presenting the Live Issues program.
It's going down each week. Only in the land of Ash, nerdcore at its finest.
Hey guys, King Baby Duck here, and welcome to the second part of our Anime Boston 2014 interview series. On today's episode, our special guest is Kyle Hebert, who has been heard on such classic anime series as Dragon Ball Z, Naruto, and Bleach. You can also hear him as Ryu in the Street Fighter video games and Wreck-It Ralph, and as the voice of Kevin Smith's Smodco Internet Radio announcer. During this interview, I was accompanied by the people from IronThink.com, Guardian Liberty Voice, The Couchmasters, Wicked Anime, and GameAndComic.com, all of whom had some great questions of their own as well. So let's get things rolling with this Anime Boston 2014 interview special featuring Kyle Hebert.
So, how often do people come up to you and say that because of Dragon Ball Z, it's your voice that narrates their daily lives in their heads?
I've heard through the years that, you narrated my childhood, you're part of my childhood. And it's like, on the one hand, it's like, oh, you're making me feel old. But no, the overarching general thing is, it's like, wow, that's something I couldn't anticipate when I was recording it in the early 2000s. And what started my VO career is like, I'm just part of a big show that I'm already a fan of, that's huge with people. It's helped breaking anime and making it mainstream on Toonami. And, here we are, 14 years later. And I got people coming up no matter where I go, no matter how many things I've done since then. It's like I am Spock syndrome or Shatner with Kirk. It's like Dragon Ball Z. It's like, I am in Titanfall. Like, no, man, the narrator. Like, all right. So I embrace it because, I'm proud of my attachment to the shows and all that, especially that one, because
always proud to be throwing Hugin.
Well, that too, and I love that, the Hadouken and the Kamehameha, they're basically the same pose, so I can Kamehameha Hadouken, really the same thing at the end of the day. So yeah, it's a very unique thing. It's very flattering and humbling, and I'm very grateful to be a part of it all.
As a growing up, as a lot of people I can say as far as consensus, just like Evan said, part of our growing up and hearing your voice as far as many different characters in Dragon Ball Z, and of course, being an avid fighting game fan, of course, Ryu, but I was just familiar with your voice, but I got to know you from one phrase: it's time to babble the fuck off. And I got to know more of you because, just like a lot of us who are fans of podcasting, you submitted that because I believe that from what they said on the show that you were a fan of that show. So
yeah.
You said that, and then you became a staple of that show, and then you became the voice of Sir with their podcasting network. And
yeah,
just hearing you on the commercials, like talking about, like, and having you say words that, that would come out of Kevin Smith's mind was...
But yeah. Because I wrote them. I wrote the promos. Figured it had to match.
So it seemed like he's got a very twisted mind. He's very, very dirty, funny kind of guy. You've seen it in all his different movies. But are you yourself a podcast junkie? Could you consider yourself, do you listen to a lot of that stuff?
Yeah. I listen to Sir in general, but Babylon's my favorite out of them all.
Ralph Garman.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And, I can actually say that I see Kevin Smith maybe two or three times a year, and he actually recognizes me and gives me a hug and all that. It's like, oh, that's awesome. Now, as the voice of his network, I deal with his people. Will Wilkins, who does Netheads, is actually kind of a program director sort of position if it were a radio station.
Yeah.
So he emails me saying, hey, we need promos for this, that, and the other, and CSMOD.
So you come home with all the copy?
Yeah.
Okay. That's
yeah. So I got to create that persona of Sir Dude.
Oh, okay.
That's my creation.
Hey, Sir Dude. Yeah, I've always assumed that was something that Kevin Smith came up with.
No.
So that's you.
It's all my fault. And they say within the past year that they've backed off of that, and they just want me to use my natural voice. And it's like, either way, you know, but I'm basically their on-demand promo voice guy. So
cool.
Sometimes there's a month, and I like, there's nothing. They don't want anything? Okay. Then other times they're like, we need 7 promos. Like, all right.
Just like that show, like, you know, getting to know you more, I got to know, like, Ralph Garman more, just as far as him being the voice guy for the Kevin and Bean show in Los Angeles, just all his different cavalcade of voices, whether it be Charlton Heston or his David Bowie songs or whatever. So,
yeah.
That's a great question, because that was the one major question I wanted to ask, because... I'm a huge podcast junkie, and of course a lot of people around here, we do podcasts themselves.
Great.
And also, I myself submit a lot of stuff to shows, and it's great to see, like, you know, a person that's just high up there as far as voice actors going, like, I'm such a fan, here, I want to share this with you, and it just worked out, so.
Yeah, and I was just tickled that they even just played it back and read the email on the show, and I never thought anything. And Kevin's, I'm listening, I'm driving in traffic, and Kevin Smith goes, what's this guy's name, Kyle Aber? Hey, Kyle, send it in with Ralph's name, not Frank. I called him Frank Garman for some reason. I don't know why. I was nervous, but I cracked Kevin Smith up, and that was great. And then, it just grew into, it's like... Jay Mew's wife, Jordan, emailed and said, hey, we want you to be the voice of the network. And I'm like, whoa! Mind blown. Strippy. So, I had something I was going to say about it, and I totally forgot. But it's another situation where, like, I started as a fan, starting with Clerks back in the early 90s, and then the whole podcasting. Yeah, that was what I was going to say. Podcasting. Yes, I'm a huge fan of podcasting because it gives the power of radio to anyone with a mic and an internet connection. There, you don't need the FCC. There's no censorship. You can create a talk show, on-demand talk show, about any topic, and it's there for the world to consume.
In the old talent, yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't have that growing up. I didn't have that. I majored in broadcasting, so if I wanted to do a talk show about geeky stuff, I would have to prove that I had an FCC license and beg some local public radio station, probably.
Yeah, night shift.
And then get on 9 a.m. on Sunday mornings with a bunch of really boring ads, and I'd be on for 30 minutes and then get pulled because no one's listening. But it's different. And then now, okay, yes, there's a lot of clutter because there's so many people all filling the void, but it's exciting too, because if you sift through that stuff, there are some really golden nuggets you can find in podcasting. People, user-generated content. I love the way how social media and the internet and the way we are as consumers is all kind of blended together and just made this really interesting hodgepodge of info.
I'm going to be lame and ask a short, quick question that seems kind of obvious. What's it like having a piece of Attack on Titan?
Unreal. Unreal. Another thing where I totally geeked out. Now, when I recorded... I first thought, they didn't tell me what I was working on. I first thought it was Call of Duty. Because basically Titanfall is Call of Duty with mechs. It's got the Call of Duty in Titanfall. But Attack on Titan, you know, sorry, I'm confusing them both. Because I'm in both. But yeah, I knew about how huge this show was, the buzz and everything. And then I went home over Christmas. And Mike McFarland said, got a part for you. Like, sweet, awesome, I wanted to be on this show. He goes, all right, cool. We got a named character. We thought you're here. It's like, that'd be cool. I thought, wow, sweet, I got a named guy. It's like, yeah, he won't last long, but still. Yeah, that's true. He lasts longer, though. Spoilers! But, a few episodes longer. So, yeah, and it kind of tripped me when they said, we're going to announce the cast in the staggered announcements, and it's like, you're announcing me? I mean, my little guy? Like, okay. I haven't seen the show at all. I only know about it, and I know how huge it is. So hopefully tomorrow I'll go see what I guess they're debuting a couple episodes at least or something. I am very excited because people are going on and on about how insane and dark and twisted the show is, and I could tell from just my parts recording on it, it's like, this is very different and unique. I want to see what this is all about.
I'm just curious, from your perspective, with other things that you're working on, getting ready to work on, whatever, what if you had, say, you wanted something covered, or you wanted something you wanted more exposure than it's getting, or that you're invested in, that do you want to promote, what's that project? What's the project you want, are getting ready to work on, or working on that you would want exposed, more, or to get out?
Well, I mean, when we record on things, we're typically under a non-disclosure agreement. We're not allowed to talk about it until it comes out. But I can say generically, I mean, my goal in voiceover is to voice on domestic animated stuff, so cartoons. I've gotten to play a little bit and dabble and, be on the Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes for a couple episodes. And then, I've since auditioned for other things like Transformers and all that. But it's a tough nut to crack. And other folks who started at Funimation have gone way up the ladder, and it's like, actor jealousy and envy. Travis and Troy and Laura, I mean, they're all Avengers on the new cartoon, and then Troy Baker is an infamous, second son, and it's his image that they mo-capped in the game. Emma and Travis is in there too, and I think Laura. I haven't done any mo-cap. I would love to do some motion capture. I would love to do more animated projects, but I mean, honestly, I'm thrilled to just get to do anything. I'm not picky. I mean, if I get called in to do bit part voices on Titanfall, so be it. I hear myself somewhere in the background because it's all blended in. It's like all these guys just shouting. It's like, all right, I think I heard me. Oh, yeah, and I just died.
That's gonna be weird.
It's a little freaky. It's like, I think that was me. No, I'm not sure it was me. Too husky. Because they record these things a year in advance, and then you're under that gag order until it comes out. And like I was saying, I thought it was Call of Duty, and then I had a second session, and they come back, and it's like, it's called Titanfall. It's going to be one of the biggest games next year. Like, okay, cool. So I write it down in my notes, sync it to my phone and everything, so... And then I start hearing an E3, and then you start seeing the buzz. It's like, oh, that. I want to play that. I got an Xbox One just because of the beta. I was going to wait. It's like $500 for a console, and all I want is this one game. Am I crazy? Yes, I'm crazy. Oh, they have one with an 18-inch statue of the Titan. I'm like, okay, I'll get that. I'm crazy, all right. Oh, my God. I'm completely nuts.
So we already went over about how beloved a lot of your roles are. I don't know if this role in particular, this is just an example that I'm more familiar with, so feel free to replace it with something you knew more about in advance. But something like doing Big the Cat in Sonic Colors, if you know going in that it's a, shall we say, unpopular character, how do you approach something like that? Do you take it and run with it? Do you try to flip it around and be like, no, really?
I've played, Sonic Adventure back when Dreamcast came out, but I did not know that he was like the Jar Jar Binks of Sonic. When I got cast, I was like, hey, I get to be in a Sonic game. I'm pretty excited about that. That's another huge franchise. That looks good on the resume. So, and then Jack Fletcher, who directed the dub of Spirited Away, directed the game. And I got called in, and it's like, yeah, just voice match this guy. Like, okay. And then, the guy I voice match was John St. John, Duke Nukem. So, and then I play back the clips and on BehindTheVoiceActors.com. It's like, I don't sound anything like John St. John. Why'd they hire me? Oh, well, glad they did. But and then it's even weirder how I record a whole playable level for Sonic Generations, and they strip it out. But I'm still in the credits.
Wow.
Check cleared. I mean, that's the good part. But I would rather the level be there, If I'm going to record for something, I don't want it to end up on the cutting room floor, even if it is the Jar Jar Binks of Sonic. But I like doing that voice. It's fun. I think he looks cool. He gets a bad rap. Poor Big.
Well, at least you're not the, you didn't play the human love interest of Sonic in that, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Has there been anything where you knew going in that you were the Jar Jar Binks of that particular?
Wow. Did I go in doing something? I don't think so. No, I can't really think of any cases. I mean, I've had characters that I felt were kind of useless, but, you know.
You have to find out later that was a character.
You find out later that it's like, oh, people hate this guy. Like, oh, okay. Well, again, check cleared. So they can hate all they want. At least I got paid having fun, you know, yeah. at the end of the day.
I was hoping you could just kind of walk us through the process of when you find out that you're going to be doing a new character, what do you do to prepare that new voice? And also, for example, with Attack on Titan, do you prefer to watch your Japanese counterpart, or do you kind of just want to do your own thing and focus on your own voice?
Well, when you're cast in something, well, the audition scripts show you a general guideline about what they're looking for. They give you a picture of the character, a description of them, and then lines that show a range of emotion. And so you go in an audition, and obviously what you get in the audition is your interpretation of that character. And sometimes they'll direct you in a different way for take two, maybe a different way for take three, just to see how you react and everything. Sometimes it's you're working in tandem with the director to kind of settle on a voice. Other times they have something very, very specific in mind, and then your job as the actor is to take that direction, give them what they're looking for, be efficient. What was the first question again? I think I
just the process.
There's actually no preparation involved because there's no rehearsal time. We're not given the scripts or anything. You don't watch footage. We're basically a blank slate. So we show up, you know, we're scheduled, we get a call or an email saying, hey, come to the studio at from 9 to 11 on Tuesday, and it's like, all right. You show up, and the first few minutes is the director catching you up, and it's like, all right, in this episode, this happens, and you don't sit there and watch the episode from start to finish. They're queuing up your dialogue because time is money, so all I see are my parts as me to be in Attack on Titan. I don't see the things leading up to it. That's why I depend on Mike McFarlane to give me the context of it. Because all I'm seeing my script, which is numbered, everything's in order, it's all divvied up into reactions and dialogue, and then there's a time code burned into the video, so everything syncs up. We preview it in Japanese, so we can get the idea of how loud or soft to make it. Some clients are very, you know, like, yes, we want this to match the Japanese as much as possible. Others are like, make it your own. So it just depends. Sometimes we have more freedom. I do know that there's technical reasons why, you know, if it says one thing in the subtitles and it says something completely different in the dub track, it's not just because we're like, ha ha, you know. It's not about that. It's technical. You know, you've got to make it conversational, for one, for a Western audience. And second of all, it has to fit the lip sync. So a script that's gone through three or four drafts and then finally gets into the studio for the recording phase, it could be overwritten or underwritten by a couple of flaps, and then we have to adjust that. And that can slow down the session a little bit, but it's par for the course.
Is it weird seeing your Japanese counterpart on the same character?
Not necessarily. When I tried out for Bleach, for example, I didn't have any clue what Aizen sounded like. He just happens to sound like what I gave them on the audition and what they hired me based on. So that was just luck, I guess. And Viz was like, yes, we want this. Like, okay. But Kamina and Gurren Lagann was an example where they said they listened to an audition from a completely unrelated project and said, here, we want you to come in and read for Kamina and Viril. Come in, we like this voice, but make him sound younger, pitch the voice higher, because this character is younger. So that's what I did with it. And when a lot of the otaku is like, oh my god, you didn't make him manly, it's like, well, first of all, he's 17, how manly can he be? Second of all, I gotta do what they tell me to do. When Armiplex tells you, it's like, you gotta make Kamina sound this, it's like, yeah, well, you hired me, that's my job, to give you what you want. So I did the job. Just like Four Kids. Everyone hates on the Four Kids dubs for the butchering and this, that, and the other. But the acting, you can hate on the actors too, but they did their job.
You did like all the male character voices for the recent remastering of the X-Men arcade game. Was it difficult trying to do different voices for so many of these different characters that you could play as?
Believe it or not, Marvel didn't care. They had a rep there, and then it's like, we're not too concerned about everybody sounding completely different. It's okay. Because they did play some of the original tracks, and it's like, wow, I don't think they even really tried in the early 90s. But I tried to give it some integrity. You know, it's like, I want to make it sound at least like they hired more than one person. And hopefully it sounds like there's more than one person on there, but boy, was it fun. I mean, I don't know why they wouldn't, just for nostalgia's sake, just leave it alone. They remastered the graphics, HD and all that, so that's awesome. But for whatever reason, they decided to have me and Melalee come in and voice all the guys and girls. And it's just a quick 20-minute recording. You know, I could see on an Excel spreadsheet, here's all my guys, and it's like, Pyro turned you to toast, or, you know, I'm the Juggernaut, bitch. No. I wish that were in there.
You know.
But you're like, go and save the city. You know, fun stuff. But yeah, I didn't, I had no idea that there even was a 90s X-Men game that, you know, it was with bad English in it and all that. It's like, oh, it's a Japanese game. But, yeah, I mean, it's fun. I've actually heard that at some of the game conventions, people will go around just like doing the Colossus power-up yell. I'm like, ugh! And my friends who are going, it's like, you won't believe what they're doing, man. You're a meme. I'm like, what? Really? Yeah, like, okay, I'll take it.
I thought you did a great job, though.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It was fun. I mean, it's not reinventing the wheel. It's just, you know, super cheesy. And I love doing cheesy.
I know that you have a background or a past in Radio Disney. And I know that you were in Wreck-It Ralph playing Ryu. Is there any chance of you hopefully getting a part in The Incredibles 2 that's actually coming out? Maybe possibly a cameo role, maybe an epic bad guy? Would be really sweet, because I know that you were very excited. I saw it on your Twitter.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've only been waiting for an incredible sequel for how long?
Yeah.
And like this little whole genre of superhero movies, it's like, you're missing this window. Come on, make it. But Brad Bird, you know, for better or worse, wanted to focus on other projects, and he went on to direct an awesome live-action sequel to Mission Impossible, mm-hmm. Ghost Protocol. It's like, wow, not only is he a brilliant animator and creator, he's also a kick-ass action director. So it's like, you go, dude. But to have him come full circle, and I'm sure, you know, money talks with Disney acquiring Marvel, and then it's like, you know, this Incredibles thing. You dangle a carrot and like, oh, all right, fine, I'll come back. Oh, that's great. Do I think me or any of the other voice actors of our ilk, the gaming, the anime people, have a shot at it? Very minimal. As you know, I mean, that's a fluke with Wreck-It Ralph, because that's a video game themed
exactly,
movie.
Yes.
And
you're
they,
on the radar. Yes.
I'm on the radar, but, I mean, I haven't been called since then. Roger Craig Smith has. He went on to be the villain in Planes.
Oh, okay.
Which really blew my mind. I didn't see Planes, but it blew my mind, because that's a celebrity cast. You know, that's the thing you do with a major animated movie. You get people from Broadway, or you get big celebs to do it. So I think the chance of me getting to do a big bad guy, probably next to none. It's already hard enough to try to get in the doors with Disney or DreamWorks, even to do bit parts. And if you guys stay after the credits for all these major animated blockbusters, you might see a Rob Paulsen or a Billy West, or names you might know from the animated community, or maybe someone from the anime community. You know, Yuri Lowenthal, or a Steve Bloom, or something. Fred Tatasciore. But it's not guaranteed. And, you know, that's a trend that I wish Hollywood would alter, get away from that. Okay, I get it that it works for live action. People want to see a name. People do all that. But when you're making a family film where the audience is mostly kids, kids don't care that it's Eddie Murphy as Donkey.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
They don't care.
As long as you match the character, it looks good. It's an untapped potential, bringing in all those other great voice actors. like Vic, like yourself.
Well, thank
like
you.
Yuri, like just anybody, because just such a wealth because you really don't have to sell them on like, oh, this is Jason Scott Lee, or it's like,
yeah.
Or this is, I don't know, random A-list celebrity being a voice actor, because he could totally bomb at it, but the fact that his name is selling the movie, it's unfortunate.
Right, right. So the best, I think, the way it would play out is like, oh, your random minion will be someone, and if you stay after the credits, maybe you'll see
random
them.
Random bad guy number one.
Random bad guy. And I'd take it, don't get me wrong, I'd take it with a big smile on my face. Because, honestly, the Wreck-It Ralph thing, for two lines, it's really insignificant, but for me, it was personally just a huge achievement.
I got hyped when I saw that. I was like,
yeah. Yeah.
All the other different characters just around seeing that picture.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, were you all, who was the voice of Zangief? Is that also you?
No, that was the director.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel sorry for the actor who voiced Zangief, because, yeah, he didn't get to come back. But, you know, you got Bison, they got his actor. And they were playing around with possibly bringing in, you know, Chun-Li and Travis Willingham's character. So they were like, Disney kind of put a little thing about, like, we're interested. And then nothing happened. They didn't call them back, so.
We should still have this Street Fighter. Like, Street Fighter Ultra just came out. So you're a big part of still that, so.
Yeah, yeah.
The enemy's next.
Sorry about that.
Sure. I'm sorry. I'm giving long answers.
All right. So you already told us you like to play video games.
I do.
And we all know you're in Street Fighter.
Thank you.
Serious but weird question. Who's your favorite Street Fighter character?
Gee, I wonder. No, I always like playing as my characters because if it's playable, I get the biggest rush out of that. I mean, I've been on shows for years, so it doesn't really faze me to like, oh, I'm on Cartoon Network. I know, first world problems. I'm just kind of used to that. But a game is interactive media, so it's like, all right, I never know when I'm going to hear a certain line said or whatnot. And then you get these little surprises, like you record on a game, and then you think, oh, it's not going to go anywhere, it's a new franchise, no one knows it, and then it blows up and overtakes World of Warcraft, talking about League of Legends.
Yep.
So people, you know, latch on and they freak out, you know, the way that the people who grew up on Dragon Ball Z is, oh my god, you're Ezreal? Oh, you're Jarvan? You're Graves? Like, yeah. Why? Like, oh my god! I play as a champion! Like, alright, awesome. That's cool. And then I try to play League of Legends. I'm terrible at it. Terrible. I button mash and everything. So, as much as I love games, I am not what would anyone would consider to be a good gamer.
You're saying it's hard enough to get in. What are the biggest challenges? I mean, is it a matter of the process or wanting bigger names? Or what is the challenge?
It's always an uphill battle to get into the animated world, specifically because it's such a niche or niche, depending on your pronunciation, sort of thing. And there's a very small, you know, relatively talent pool of people who are on those casting people's radar. And to their credit or whatever you want to call it, you know, they're going to, of course, call that same talent pool over and over again because they've proved themselves. Now, should they open up the net and let some new guys come in? Absolutely. But that chance is rare, and I wish it would happen more often. I sometimes say that it was like, hey, Troy, can you get sick for like a week or two? Maybe? Can you let someone else work? But I mean, the people, here's the thing, they're all super duper talented. That's why they got hired in the first place, and that's why they continue to be hired. And who wouldn't want to be in that position? So if I were a Tara Strong or a Rob Paulson, I mean, man, I'd never move away. I mean, I'm never going to move away anyway. I love my job, so it's like I'm never going to retire because that's the coolest job on the planet. Doesn't matter what you look like, and you can voice all this wide range of characters. And, you know, when you feel like there's nothing else in life that you want to do, that you're just meant to do something, then you don't give up. You just deal with the baggage that comes with it, which is constant rejection. And you audition, nothing. Audition, and maybe one out of 50, you might get a callback. Or you might book the gig.
So there's always the question, the stereotypical trope of what's your favorite, but I often find this a lot more interesting. What do you think is your best? Because I know at least for anything I've done, what my favorite is not always what was actually my best work.
So okay.
I'm curious as to what you think your best performance was.
I rarely get to play something that's, you know, dead serious. Usually it's something a little over the top or cartoonish, which I love because that's why I got into it in the first place. But and this one didn't do well. But I was like the main bad guy, Jensen, in the Iron Man anime. And I got a chance to play some real subtle sort of things that the character, who is good in the live-action movie, they went in a different direction in the anime. And he, you know, builds his own stealth suit and everything. And it was fun to get to play that dynamic. And I had friends tell me, it's like, you know, I know that the Iron Man anime, the Marvel anime titles don't sell that well, and no one really gets on board with it. But I just wanted to say that, you know, I thought you did a magnificent performance and all that. It's like, wow, thank you. And I felt at the time I was recording, and it's not about being cocky or anything. I just thought that it's like, this is gelling really well. This feels right. And I actually still haven't seen the final product. I'm just remembering from when I was recording and then hearing from friends about, it's like, this is really, really good. And it's not on anyone's radar. Marvel anime in general, sure, but most people just didn't see it, or whatever. Or it aired on G4, and that was a dying network at the time, and no one caught it.
Kind of bouncing off that, has there ever been a character in any show that you wish, like, what would be your dream voice acting job?
Dream role would be something akin to, like, the next SpongeBob, whatever that's going to be. Dream role would be just to be on anything that Andrea Romano is directing. You know, she did Animaniacs, Batman, Korra, Teen Titans. Awesome. The list goes on, you know. I particularly would have loved to have been in that early 90s era of Warner Brothers animation with Tiny Toons, Animaniacs, Hysteria. Mm-hmm. To be a fly on the wall with Charlie Adler on, like, Cow and Chicken. Oh my God, that show is insane. The creativity, or Billy West with Ren and Stimpy, just killer stuff.
A few years ago, you did a short, really goofy and really funny CGI film called Magnum Farce,
mm-hmm.
and I was reading somewhere that there was supposed to be like a full length version of this film. Do you know when this might be coming out?
Well, as most things in Hollywood, you know, you're trying to get financing and whatnot, and this was made before the era of Kickstarter and crowdfunding and all that, and I don't know if Ken Mora, the creator, has considered about doing that, but it's kind of languishing in production limbo, unfortunately, trying to find an animation house to do that. You know, his screenplay for the Magnum Farce film, which is a parody of Clint Eastwood Dirty Harry movies, that won a lot of awards and everything, and the short went on to win a lot of awards itself. And the short is meant as a promotional piece for the film, and we've recorded tracks for it, but it hasn't been animated yet. And, you know, a lot of time has passed since we did that, so I'm a little concerned that it's probably not going to happen. But at least the short got done, the little 5-minute piece that got out there.
I hope it gets made somewhere down the line.
Thank you. I hope so, too. I mean, I know that, you know, there is a market for parody films, and Ken's thing with this screenplay and many others that haven't even been announced publicly, but wanted to be like the Pixar for adult animation, basically. Just produce quality CG animation, but, you know, yeah, with that Family Guy, you know, that not for little kids sort of appeal. And I think that's a great premise, and I think there's definitely a huge market for it, obviously, with Family Guy's ratings and Robot Chicken and all the things of that. There's definitely a market for it, but when you're not a name and you're just an independent producer trying to get it out there, it's tough. It's a tough sell.
For the Naruto Ultimate Ninja Storm 3 or the video game series on Xbox 360 and PS3, do they take your tracks from the actual dubbed cartoon or anime, onto the video game itself, or do they actually bring you in to record all new tracks for certain situations?
For Naruto, I'm not 100% sure. They may have an archive of fight sounds. I know they've done that with the Dragon Ball Z series. Which is nice in that it preserves our voice for the session. But it sounds a little kind of cheaty because we hear it's like, that's the exact same fight sound from the last game. Mm-hmm. And but that's been known to happen. But yeah, usually, I mean, we come in, we do brand new tracks, a brand new story mode for Naruto or any other game franchise series or whatever. And we'll come in and we'll lay down a new track of reactions and, you know, attacks and damage and all that. We do the dialogue first, and then you do your fight sounds at the end, your death scream at the very, very end. And hopefully you'll still have your voice intact at the end.
Have you recorded anything for the final revolution?
I don't think so.
The new one that's actually coming out. Okay.
Don't think so. But I would assume that, I mean, they sell enough that we keep dubbing them, so...
Yeah.
I'm sure it's just a matter of time.
If you were not a voice actor, what would you like to do?
Become a voice actor. Because I just love doing that. Alternatively, you know, I miss playing drums. I grew up playing. I had a drum set. I still do. It's in storage in Dallas. But when you live in an apartment, you can't exactly bang on them. But Johnny Young Bosch was very sweet and gave me an old electronic set that I have to set up still. But at least you put the headphones on and jam out, and then you won't bug the neighbors. I don't have the discipline, though, you know, to be a musician. You know, you got to spend 10 years to try to get on someone's radar and play a bunch of crappy gigs that no one goes to, and you don't make any money and all that stuff. But, I mean, when you do it for the love, you know, there's something to be said for that. Or for the chicks. But I love film. I love movies. I think I would love something to do in the post-production side, though. I've dabbled in on camera, but VO is really my focus. But yeah, like audio post-production or special effects, I think that's pretty fascinating. Not just CG. I miss the old school, you know, practical effects. Which is something that the Evil Dead reboot, I was really, really digging on that because not only did I think it was well made, I love that they didn't cheat and use a bunch of CG blood like they did in 300. And I love 300 too, but 300 had a lot of, that's fake blood.
Digital blood is not like the explosive blood max.
Yeah.
Somebody gets shot on them.
Yeah, and like you're doing that just so you don't have to clean up and all that stuff. I get why they do it, but they have not mastered CG blood yet. It still looks like this is in post-production.
Even a Lloyd Kaufman film still gets that right.
Yeah, that's true.
You were saying, you know, the writing for the podcast for Kevin Smith and that.
Mm-hmm. Promos,
yeah. Yeah, that's it. But do you consider yourself like a writer? Do you have projects that you would want to do from on the creative set?
No, I don't have any stories or screenplays or ideas or characters per se. I have a Rolodex of characters in my head that I'll call upon for auditions and everything, but no original content. I feel I could write copy, though. I took copywriting and, you know, for commercials in college, and I've always found that pretty interesting. And then I got to do that for years with Radio Disney. Writing infotainment features. You know, we would talk about video games or talk about gross bodily functions because kids love farts, you know. It's like, why is poop brown? You know, and all this stuff. It's like, okay, cool. So writing copy comes pretty naturally to me. But the longer stuff, I think I'd rather stick on the other side of, I'll just perform someone else's content. I can't say I'll feel that way 10 years from now, but every actor's like, I want to direct. It's like, well, yeah, I'd love to direct, sure, but I wouldn't want to. Oh, if you think about the directors, they have unsurmountable pressure. Unsurmountable. One person basically in charge of millions of dollars, and you're in charge of a crew of thousands or thousands of people, and if that movie tanks, they're looking at you to either not hire again or whatnot. Not so sure I would want that pressure, J.J. Abrams. Yeah, yeah. But I feel good about Star Wars, actually, because I love J.J. Abrams. I think that's a good mix, so I have good hope.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he's sweating bullets right now. It's like, how do you take a beloved franchise that was made worse by prequels, and then how ironic, it's like everyone's so thrilled that the creator of Star Wars has nothing to do with the screenplay for the new Star Wars. But it's like, just step back. Let's get the guy who wrote Empire Strikes Back. Thank you very much. Okay, maybe we'll have a good chance. Let's get that guy who did the Star Trek reboots. Yeah, because he made Star Trek look like Star Wars. He made it fun, and he got girls to watch Star Trek. It's like, let's get young, hot people to play the characters instead of these grizzled old people.
We already touched a little bit on League of Legends and how, for your voices, they were early on, so it was well before there was any indication of how big it would get.
Yeah.
Possible, I guess this hasn't even occurred to you at this point, but I was just double checking, and at this point there's 27 million people a day playing that game.
Whoa.
And at least one, if not two, of your characters are popular enough where there's a good chance 2 to 3 million people a day are hearing your voice.
I have not heard these stats before. That's trippy.
I was going to say, it's never occurred to you, I mean...
No.
The numbers in general from things like Dragon Ball Z are way up there, but we're now talking per day.
Per day. Yeah, that's pretty wild. Now, granted, I can put myself, because I am one, a gamer. You play the game because of the game. You don't play the game for the voice acting. You know what I mean? And that's a piece of the puzzle. So, I mean, I'm not going to speak for everyone, but I'm assuming most gamers, they put that disc in, or they boot it up, or whatever, and they play the game. Again, and this is the rant about Hollywood. Like, they don't play Call of Duty because Gary Oldman's in it. They play it because they want to get online with their friends and talk smack to 12-year-olds and whatnot and all that. And they want, you know, a good gameplay experience. And hopefully that's what the voice actors bring to that experience. Is like, we can help build the performance and meld that thing between the animation and the writing and the acting, and to present a product that the gamer will just... think that there's no, like, well, that's acting. It's like, no, I believe that. That's a character. That's the reality, and I'm fully immersed in that. And, you know, that's a win-win if we can make the gamer feel like this is worth investing in. So when you have stats like that, where they're playing a game millions of times a day or whatever, that's mind-boggling to me. I don't know where you got those stats, but... Woo.
The company themselves, Riot, released
that. Oh, Riot released that? Wow.
As of January, that they have around 27 million a day.
Wow. Well, you floored me, sir.
Do you have any upcoming projects that you talked about?
Why, yes! And then I get fired. No. Well, let's see. Currently, you can hear me on Cartoon Network on Tenkai Nights as Commander Beeg. I'm also on Digimon Fusion, which is on CW, as Darulamon and Ballistamon, and then Naruto Shippuden on Toonami as Kiba and Inoichi, and various other ninja. I tend to be bit parts anyway. I'm Vilius as well in Tenkai Nights. He's one of the elders. So that's what's currently going on. Earth Defense Force 2025 came out. I'm all throughout that game. Of course, Titanfall. Attack on Titan comes out this summer. At least part one does. More games and shows on the horizon. I usually just, whenever they're finally announced, then boom, I can tweet about it or put it on my website. And I'm one of those actors that loves promoting what he's on.
You're also in the John DiMaggio documentary about the voice actors, correct?
Am I? No, I don't think so. I wasn't interviewed for it. No, I wish. I bought it. I got it on iTunes. I haven't watched it yet. I actually loaded it up on my iPad mini, and I keep meaning to watch it on these long plane flights for cons. And then I forget that I have it.
Just want to sleep, huh?
I want to try. I close my eyes. I have 5.5 hours to kill. I'm like, I'm not comfortable because I'm 6'3", and I'm on a packed flight, and everyone's like reclined, and I'm like, I'm not comfortable, so I can't sleep. First world problems, I know.
You've done some guest spots on the Team 4-Star Dragon Ball Z Abridged series.
Mm-hmm.
Are Abridged series something that you were won over automatically, or was it something that you came to terms and thought and had to learn that they were pretty cool and whatnot?
Well, no, I mean, I've already knew that they were popular and funny. You know, I haven't watched all the episodes, but it's like, no, these guys are great. And, you know, I've met them since then and become friends. See them on the convention circuit, and they pack a room, man. It's like, who's in there, Vic? And like, nope, it's Team Four Star. Like, oh, wow. Huge following. And they're introducing, I consider, they're introducing a new generation of fans to something like DBZ or Yu-Gi-Oh! Or Attack on Titan, because these people are watching it in a funny, out-of-context way. And then maybe they're going to go back and go, I want to watch the original show now. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, they're a little biased because they have the funny jokes and everything, but I think it's awesome. I mean, it obviously skids that gray area of copyright, this, that, and the other. It's like, yes, it's a fan dub. But when you take something like the internet, and again, it's user-generated content to a degree, you know, the audio part of it is, but you're manipulating copyrighted stuff, it's still, you know, for better or worse, it's generated an audience. And, you know, I think it's really funny. I can't wait to see what they do, you know, with a complete 100% original project. I think that would really, really take off, because now they have a built-in fan base.
Is there a series that you yourself would like to see someone to bridge, or some, whether it was a show that mm-hmm. you've been a part of, or something that you haven't been a part of?
God. Not necessarily. Yeah, I can't really think of anything right now.
Ryu, Gohan, or Balto Fallman from Full Metal Alchemist, who's better at picking up ladies?
Who's better at picking up ladies? Well, Fallman sucks at it. He couldn't even get ladies for other people in that show. In the Street Fighter world, he'd probably go for Cammy because, you know, dead ass. He might be able to win him over with the Zen thing, you know.
Or his muscles, just, you know, totally open out.
Or the muscles. Or the hobbit feet. I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. He's got it going on. Like Donkey Kong. Now, Gohan is... I have run out of times... I've lost count, what I mean to say, of how many girls go, I had the biggest crush on Gohan, or he was my first anime crush, and this, that, and the other. It's like, really?
Kamehameha, how you doing, right?
Kamehameha, how you doing? Yeah. That's right. So, maybe he would win the sexy times wars, probably, Gohan, actually, when I think about it.
Is that in the Great Saiyan costume or out of
the Great
Saiyan
costume? I'm sorry,
Yeah, really. Well, I could say that if it were Gohan, I don't think it's the Great Saiyan Man that wins the sexy contest. I think it's probably like Mystic Gohan or... Yeah.
Who's your anime crush?
Who is my anime crush? Who is friggin' hot? Faye Valentine.
Yeah.
Major Kusanagi, Ghost in the Shell. Who else is hot? So many.
Those are good answers.
They are?
Same.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Same. I can't just have one. You know,
no, it's a per series thing.
Per series. Is that how that works? Okay. Mm-hmm. Nice. Those are the only ones that really come to mind.
Yeah, that's all.
Do you still, like, when you're working on a project now, do you still feel like the pressure that you're still building your brand or whatever, you know, to the point, is that, I mean, is there the fear, you know, is that a huge pressure on you to make sure to get the next project and not fail? You know, are you comfortable enough now that you that you're made it or whatever to the point where, or are you still, like, under the gun to make sure that you're...
I feel that after 14 years, I feel I'm definitely a better actor because I'm more experienced and I've taken acting classes since then. I'm one of those rare birds that crossed over from radio instead of a theatrical background. So I definitely think I've come a long way, and I'd like to think that after 14 years I know what I'm doing, so I meet the challenge and I'm always excited for the chance to play a new character or revisit an old one or have an unnamed bit part or play five or six roles in a game in within a 2-hour time span or whatever. I just love this job, period. And to build characters from the ground up with just a few bullet points. I mean, that's exciting to me.
You were talking before about how, you know, you'll go through a large amount of auditions and nothing will come up, and mm-hmm. then you'll get however many in a row, things like that. Also, obviously, everything's under NDA. In general, do you have more stuff coming up? I mean, obviously, most recent is probably Attack on Titan that got announced.
Mm-hmm.
Is there other stuff to look out for just in general? Obviously, you can't name names, but...
Yeah.
Stuff in the pipeline, or are you
yeah.
things?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, for the past 5, 6, 7 years, I've been in LA for about 8, 8 and a half. There's always something in the pipeline. There's a lot of games. There's a lot of smartphone games coming out. More anime, of course. More series that I haven't heard of. But it's like, you're on a new show. Like, I haven't heard of this. What is this? Okay. So I'm just happy to keep working, whatever it is. I mean, I do, you know, really mundane things too, like training manual stuff for a company in France, but in English, for like really technical things. Like, things that I'm not an expert on, but I have to act like I am.
And you become an expert.
And then, yeah, it's like, I know a lot about this kind of sprocket or whatever. It's like...
That's actually my day job.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
I actually write some of the stuff that you would be reading for that.
Okay, well, if you guys need a voice for interactive training manuals.
You know sprockets.
And we just have
I know sprockets.
One more question.
Pressure. I guess, light question, looking back at everything you've done, what would you say is your all-time favorite? Like, what moment really sticks out for you as one of your most
proud? Well, the Dragon Ball Z thing started everything. So everything that I've gotten to do since then is obviously goes back to like a domino effect. But the one that still means the most to me is still that Wreck-It Ralph thing. Just getting to be on a Disney movie, and especially one that's so good and really resonated. And hopefully we'll have a sequel, and hopefully they would bring everybody back. And I would love to have another 2 lines. Or maybe more. It would be awesome.
Make it 3 this time.
Make it 3. I'm dreaming big. Thank you, guys. Have fun transcribing all those really long answers.